In the early 1940s, Curtis was a crop duster who wanted to fly aerobatics, but he didn't have enough money to buy a plane, so he designed and built one that bears his name, Pitts. The little biplane he designed dominated aerobatic competition in the 1960s and 70s around the world. But in a fabric-covered airplane, the smell of something burning is a serious problem. And a Pitts pilot experienced the issue. On this episode of I Laughed, I learned about flying from that. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 67 of Flying Magazine's I Learned About Flying From That podcast, brought to you by Avemco Insurance. I'm your host, Rob Ryder, and on today's show, we'll meet a pilot, a self-proclaimed tinkerer, who bought a Pitts S1 as a flying project, redoing some not-so-good wiring and replacing an improperly installed cowling. But when he smelled something burning while practicing aerobatics, what he did right enabled him to land safely and determine what had happened to his airplane. We'll talk with Marcus Baker right after this message from Avemco. There's only one aircraft insurance company that invites you to call them and actually discuss your situation with an aviation insurance specialist. That company is Avemco. What kind of flying do you do? What if you don't fly all winter? Why is it just as bad to have too much insurance as too little? Is there a penalty just for being an older pilot? Call 800-338-8705 or visit avemco.com/flying. Either way, tell them you're an I Learned About Flying From That listener and you'll save an additional 5%. Now, I Learned About Flying From That. My guest today on I Laughed is going to present a story about a Pitts biplane. He's the second guy on the I Laughed series to have a Pitts story. The other was Michael Goulian. And, well, Marcus Baker, I'm glad you're healthy, I'm glad you're wise, and I'm glad you're alive after your Pitts situation. Welcome to I Laughed.
Thanks for having me, Rob. The feeling's mutual.
Before we get into your I Laughed moment, we got to go back and find out how it all started for you, because it was something that you were inspired to chase after, some flying that ultimately you were unable to do because of some vision issues. Can you tell us how it all started for you?
Yeah, like most kids interested in aviation anyway, I always wanted to be a fighter pilot. And I was in high school doing JROTC with the Air Force. Everything was lined up. And then I lost my 2020. And at the time, the Air Force didn't accept LASIK for fighter pilots. So I said, well, you know, my grades are pretty good. I'll be an aeronautical engineer. I'll design fighter planes. Seemed like a good trade-off.
There you go.
Eventually, I talked with some of my teachers, and you know, they convinced me, well, aeronautical engineering is kind of a narrow field, maybe do mechanical. So I said, you know, okay, I can do mechanical, still work on airplanes. And I just happened into the electrical industry, which has nothing to do with airplanes. But luckily, it did provide enough income that I could then go get my private when I was 25. So 33 now, so I've been flying for about 8 years.
But you decided to go beyond just flying Cessnas or Pipers or whatever. You decided that you wanted to make the airplane go upside down.
Well, I mean, that's what I would have done if I'd gotten to be a fighter pilot too. So
sure.
I've always liked a little bit of adrenaline and seemed like a good way to do it.
What was your path to getting involved in aerobatics?
I actually got a wonderful birthday gift from my now wife, at the time fiance, for a 1 hour flight in a T-6 Texan, and it was an aerobatic flight. I had my tailwheel already, so the instructor stuck me up front and said, I'll just walk you through the maneuvers, we'll go have some fun. And at that point, I'd been bit by the bug. I had to keep doing it. So we started looking for different airplanes that might fit the bill. And happened on a Pitts S2 at the airport that we keep our other plane, a Piper Aero, and just struck up a conversation with the guy and was just fascinated by the plane, you know. Eventually, we got to go flying in it, and luckily he made that work short notice because we'd found a Pitts S1 for sale that fit the bill. And that, I mean, I guess the rest is history. That just landed us on the S1.
Even with a mechanical engineering degree and not having much previous aircraft experience in working on them, that became part of your passion as well. I mean, you did a lot of work on your plane.
I'm a tinkerer. I like to tinker with stuff, take it apart, make it better. And so, yeah, we bought it as a flying project. I completely rewired the whole plane. It was full of butt splices when we got it. New panel, new seat pan. The list is pretty long. There's a lot of new stuff on it. And unfortunately, one of the new things didn't work out in my favor, which we'll get to with the ILAF story.
Well, this might be a good time just to get started right at it, because it was this Pitts biplane in which you had the incident and you were doing some aerobatics. And let's go right to it. Tell us about what happened. When was it? And before we do, tell me about how you rewired the plane. You said there were a lot of butt splices.
Yeah, I was just going to replace a few instruments, but when I pulled out the panel, the alternator had a field switch and an output switch, which is pretty normal, but they were jumpered in the back, and then it was three different sections of wires butt spliced together getting to the alternator. I'm not sure what the guy that built it was doing, just reusing old stuff, I guess. So I ripped everything out, everything except for the magneto harness is brand new in it.
And you have a fairly advanced panel. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so standard analog gauges for airspeed and altitude, but I've got the MGL avionics for their radio and their control head, their remote mount radio. I've got MGL avionics for oil pressure and temperature and cylinder heads, and then also an MGL Info 1, which is a combo, almost everything, voltage, outside air temperature, G-forces. It's got the coordination ball, the turn slip indicator. So a little bit of everything in there.
You're able to look at each cylinder's cylinder head temperature and exhaust gas temperature individually in that, right?
That's right. That's right. All the info you need.
Absolutely. Well, tell us now about this ILAF moment. When was it? Because I think it was relatively recent, given the date of this recording, which is near the end of July of 2023.
The incident actually took place July 1st.
Of this year?
Of this year, yeah. So just over 3 weeks ago, as of the recording. And went out to Shelby Airport, Shelby, North Carolina. It's near Charlotte, if you know it. Kilo Echo Hotel Oscar. And the plan was just routine aerobatics fun. I've been just practicing and hopefully one day get to compete. So I normally climb up pretty high. I practice anywhere from 5,000 to 7,000 feet. I like to have space. And on the way up, everything was going nice. I was outside the airways. You have to stay at least 4 miles off the center of the airway. So I just pulled a couple Immelmans, just climbing on the way up. You get about 400 foot per Immelman. And when I got to altitude, did more clearing turns. Nobody in the area, no one on the radio. Said, well, I'll just get my airspeed up a little bit and start with a reverse Cuban, and we'll just see where that takes us. And got it up to about 160, which is a pretty good entry speed on the Pitts S1. Pulled into the 45 up, rolled inverted halfway, drew another line, and started the 5/8 loop back around to the bottom. It's kind of a split S at that point.
Sure.
And then on the second 45 up, right after I rolled inverted, it didn't smell right. Something smelled like it was burning. That was my initial thought. I said, something's on fire. So I rolled back upright and got straight and level, got off the 45 line and just started trying to go through things, because I had rewired the plane, but it's been like that since last April. So it hasn't had any electrical issues yet. That's where my brain went at first.
Any smell of anything burning in a fabric-covered airplane has got to be a big concern.
For sure, for sure. Especially when you don't know what it is yet, right? Like, I don't know if it's my plane. I don't know if it's the nearby power plant. Don't know if it is my plane. Is it electronics? Is there a fuel leak somewhere? Is it into the engine bay? What's going on, right? And eventually it clicked, because I had done some fiberglass work fairly recently on the plane. I said, that's not burning. That's the smell of fiberglass sanding. Luckily, I have a GoPro off of the wing strut, a 360 GoPro. So I pulled up the preview on my camera and the things I had done recently.
While you were flying?
Yeah. Maybe not the best idea, but I needed to make sure all the parts were still there.
If you've got a monitor there that you can choose and select your angle and your zoom and everything else, that's pan, tilt, zoom. It's all there. Why not take advantage of it? It's the technology you put in the plane.
Exactly. So I pulled up the preview and I looked over at the plane from the wing, and both the wheel pants were there. The wheel pants were recently redone. None of them had turned. And then the other piece I had recently done was replace the nose bowl on the cowling. And it looked...
In other words, that's the top of the cowling.
The very front of the cowling.
Okay.
The top and the bottom are metal, and then the front nose bowl where the spinner protrudes and everything, and then the prop is out.
But the nose bowl was fiberglass. Yeah, please forgive me about my ignorance about the construction of a Pitts.
It didn't look quite right, though from that angle and on my small phone, I couldn't figure out what was going on with it. So I just started pushing against my belts, because I don't know if you've ever been in a Pitts, but there's ratchet straps. I'm preloaded into that seat with like 600 pounds of force, holding my butt down in the seat so that I don't hit my head on the canopy when I invert. So I'm pushing against the straps, and I notice that you can see the nose bowl is not touching the metal. There's a gap all the way up at the front. And I'm like, okay, well, that's not good.
That's the trailing edge of the nose bowl closest to you.
That's right. That's right. So right at the front of the engine, it transitions from the fiberglass nose bowl to a piece of metal, and it had separated and was over the lip.
I understand.
So at that point, I knew something was wrong. I knew the top was disconnected. I can't see the bottom. I don't know if it's completely just free floating up there. I don't know if it's going to spin. I want to get the smell to stop. So I power way back. I think I came all the way back to 1500 RPM and slowed down to about 100 miles an hour. And the smell went away. And I was like, okay, well, that's a good first step, right? So I put a little bit of power back in, because the Pitts falls like a rock if you don't have any power. And the engine gauge looked good. All the temperatures and pressures were fine. And I pointed it back at the airport and made a much higher pattern than normal. I should say when this incident started, I came out level at 5,500 feet. And so from there, field elevation's about 900. So I had a little bit of a space to work with, but again, not a good glide ratio. So I just left the power in a little bit, about 1,700, 1,800 RPM, which is normal base and final power. And I just set it up on a constant descent, pointed it at the airport, and came on in.
And landed without incident.
Luckily. I had told myself, I found myself on short final saying, you can't go around because I don't know what's broken. I don't know what's going to happen. And I nipped that in the bud. I was like, no, that's wrong, Marcus. All your engine gauges say everything's in the green. The nose bowl's already damaged. If you tear it up more, that's okay. Don't tear up yourself. If it's going to be bad, add the power, go around, deal with the nose bowl later. It's already broken. And so that's when I actually made one of the best landings I've ever had. I think partially because I didn't have that thought of not having an option, you know?
Indeed.
So it ended up working out okay.
And we're glad it did. When you taxied clear, tell me what you discovered once you got shut down.
Yeah, so I taxied off the runway. Still didn't have a smell, so I said, well, I'll just taxi it all the way to the T-hanger. Pulled around to the T-hanger, shut down, hopped out of the plane, and went around to see what had happened. And at that point, I realized the top was the only piece that had broken loose. The bottom of the cowling was still secure to the lower sheet metal section. And it had pushed forward, which I didn't expect, but we can cover that as well. But the cowling had actually pushed forward into the back of the spinner. So you think all that air is pushing on the cowling is going to hold it against the plane, but that's just not the case. You get high pressure on top of the engine and low pressure from the high airspeed right at the cowling, and it actually pushed forward into the prop spinner combo. And that's where it had sanded.
Bernoulli at work.
Lift when you want it, and even if you don't.
Well, as a tinkerer, what did you discover?
Well, what holds that top piece to the metal cowling, there's actually the metal top over the engine, and then there's a strip of metal full of nut plates that goes underneath the fiberglass. So that fiberglass gets sandwiched between two pieces of metal, kind of like a pressure plate setup. and it's got screws along the front that hold it in place. All those screws were tight. Nothing was loose. But what I couldn't see on pre-flight was there were probably some cracks already starting to form on that new cowling where the screw holes were. And it just, it ripped loose. It ripped the fiberglass right loose from the screws and came off the front.
Was that the simple G-forces that did it? I mean, how long after you did that work did this failure occur?
I think it's been about 2-3 months now. So it's been on there successfully at much higher airspeeds, I might add, too, which would have put it under higher pressure. Actually, just the week before, it had gotten up to 180 in one of the downlines practicing some stuff and had no issues. And so this one was 160, and I reviewed the GoPro footage. It's at the very bottom of the loop where you have your maximum airspeed. It just let go, and you can see it push forward in the video and go into the spinner.
Goodness. You decided then that your sense of smell was acute enough that you could figure out that it wasn't electrical, that it wasn't oil, that it was just the fiberglass.
Yeah, only because I'd done fiberglass work earlier that year. Yeah, so I finished all the fiberglass sanding and stuff probably in March timeframe and put it on the plane late April, early May. So I still had that recent, you know, experience with it. And I was like, that smells like fiberglass burning. And that's how I was able to figure out, well, my cowling's not connected like it should be.
Sure. Your wife, you had to call your wife after you landed. What did she say?
Well, we have a thing. If something goes wrong, the first words out of your mouth on the phone call are, hi, everything's okay. But, and you, so that way she knows I'm okay. She doesn't freak out. And she's like, all right, what happened? I said, I broke the airplane, and I explained, you know, everything that had happened, everything that I knew at that point anyway. And she said, well, it doesn't sound like you broke the airplane. It sounds like the airplane broke and you landed. I was like, I guess that's accurate too. And after she figured out what was going on and that I was okay, she was like, well, just take a minute and get what you need done at the airport, take the pieces off, whatever, and then go home. And she was out of town at the time because she's an airline pilot. So she took this call from I don't even know where.
That's what I was getting to, because she's not a dummy when it comes to airplanes. She's got an ATP. She flies for Endeavor.
That's right. She does. Yeah, she's my flight instructor for my double eye. She's got her ATP flying CRJs. So, yeah, she way more ratings than I do. The only one I have that she doesn't is a tailwheel. That's the only one I have that's different. So she knew what was going on when I told her.
All's good for you and all's well that ends well. I know we've got some lessons that you've learned from that, Marcus. Let's take a break, come back, and go over some of those lessons that you learned about flying from that, and also talk about your experience as an aerobatic pilot and how that has made you a better pilot overall. So we'll be right back after this message.
Sounds good.
Ask your flight school or FBO if their insurance covers you when you rent their plane. The answer is almost certainly no. Even if they do, you'll probably still be on the hook for a big deductible. For as low as $95 a year, an Avemco Insurance Company renter's policy will protect you with no deductible ever. Visit avemco.com/flying or call 800-338-8705 and you'll be covered the next time you fly. Now, back to I Laughed. We're back with Marcus Baker, who had a safe landing in a pits after the airplane threatened, parts of it threatened to come loose and maybe cause some serious damage. I'm glad you made it back, but Marcus, there have to have been some lessons. What did you learn about flying from that?
So I did, and I made a list so I wouldn't forget any of the important ones. This particular cowling, like I said, I had just recently replaced it, and it's because the original builder had put the old cowling on too tightly to the flywheel. And under G-forces, you know, the engine moves a little bit, and the flywheel had started to wear through the fiberglass right on the back of that cowling. So I bought a new cowling. You know, new is always better, right? Not the case in this case. When we went to fit it, we realized they had made it out of too little fiberglass. It was too thin. And so it actually cracked on the sides where the bottom metal pieces were pushing in on it. So I'd taken it home, done that fiberglass work to reinforce the sides and the bottom. And I never thought to reinforce the top. And that's because in my head, man, you got 160 mile an hour winds pushing on it. It's being held in by the air, right? Well, we discussed that already, and that's also not the case. So now that it's off the plane again, I'm going to reinforce the top. I'm almost done with all the fiberglass work, and it'll go into paint. So actually, it should only be another 3, maybe 4 weeks before the plane's back in the air. But some other lessons I learned, right? A good pre-flight does not guarantee a good flight. Everyone who flies has probably experienced this in some form or another. But that section of the cowling that broke, I couldn't see on pre-flight. Because of that second strip of metal underneath, I had no clue it was starting to crack. And maybe it wasn't, but we'll never know if it was cracking before the flight or not because I couldn't visually access it. So pre-flight was good, but maybe it wasn't. You know, I just couldn't see it.
There have to be some more lessons, and I think you alluded to one of those lessons in our initial discussion, but go ahead and see if I've got it right. Go ahead.
Definitely learned some more stuff from it as well. If you're practicing maneuvers, do it as close to a landing spot as you can, right? Be as close to an airport as possible. You have to stay legal when you start getting into aerobatics. You know, I can't be right next to an airway or in someone's airspace that touches the ground, that surface area that touches the ground. But be as close as you can. And I was only a half mile away from being illegal, so to speak. So barely legal, but barely counts in this. And that kept me close enough to the field that my decision to return was an easy one. Keep calm and fly the plane, right? And that's easy to say on the ground. But if you don't stay calm and you start to get panicked, you're not going to be able to divide your attention properly between keeping the plane straight, pointed in the right direction, at the airspeed you want, and figuring out what the heck just happened. What is wrong? What can I do to fix it? And because you have to multitask, you have to stay calm, right? And then be willing to make a decision. So I heard one of your other guests mention, do the second thing that you think of, right?
Yeah, that was Jerry Gregoire from Redbird Flight Simulations who said that.
And I don't necessarily agree or disagree, right? But the moral of the story, I think, is don't delay making a decision unnecessarily. Assess your options, figure out what you're going to do, and then stick to it if you can. Because if you just keep changing your plan over and over again, that's the same as not having a plan.
As you did that, though, as you were maintaining a location for your maneuvering relatively close to the field, you also were very cognizant and careful about having plenty of altitude, which is your friend in any situation.
And that leads me into the next thing. Don't back yourself into a corner, right? We've all heard altitude above you is completely useless. So put as much of it underneath you as you can. And that's the same for just about everything except for maybe ground reference maneuvers where you have to be a little bit closer. But leave yourself an out. And in this case, it was altitude was my out, right? I could have made it to a safe landing spot, even if it wasn't the airport, depending on what had happened, right, from that altitude. And I would have had time to recover if I'd messed something up and gone into an inadvertent spin.
But at that altitude, an inadvertent spin in a pits is recoverable.
That's exactly right. So I played with that in the pits a little bit. And I don't know if you've ever read the book Better Aerobatics, but I can't plug it enough. It's a fantastic book that tells you the aerodynamics and why things happen the way they do. Even using the emergency spin recovery, if you don't know if it's inverted or upright, you just look at which way the earth is spinning and you stop it with the rudder and let go of the stick. Even with that, the pits will recover within 1,000 feet. And that's not the standard recovery method. But if you get confused, it does work.
And you have practiced that on your own just to make sure you can be confident of recovering should that occur when you're not expecting it.
That's exactly right. I think everyone should get some sort of spin training and maybe even unusual attitudes. Because you never know what's going to happen. But if you're prepared for any eventual outcome, then it doesn't matter what's going to happen, right? To some extent, you'll be able to deal with it.
Well, this has been a very, very nice interview, and I'm glad that you've brought these lessons to us here on I Laughed. Marcus, you say you want to compete. Have you joined the IAC?
No, not at this point. I've got it filled out. I think it's actually sitting on my kitchen table. I need to put the stamp on it and send it in. But I have met with a couple of the different folks that are members and compete. Some of them face-to-face, some of them across the country. We just kind of talk through the marvelous technology that we have. And I do want to compete at one point. I don't think I'm at the level yet to be competitive. Still trying to make sure my loops are round if you look at them from the ground. But other than that, it shouldn't be too much longer.
Set the vertical line. Do you fly with smoke on those things?
I don't have smoke on mine, and I'm kind of okay with that because I have helped clean up a plane after it ran smoke, and you wouldn't believe all the places it gets.
Well, you can keep yours clean, and I would say to you and to your wife, congratulations on both of you having good aviation careers, and your work in the electrical field has, I'm sure, helped support your love of flying. Marcus Baker, thank you so much for being with us on I Laughed.
Thank you, Rob. I really appreciate you having me. And I listen to all your podcasts. I appreciate what you're doing for the aviation community.
Thanks, partner. Appreciate that. I really appreciate Marcus's reaching out to me with his story and sharing the lessons he learned. And if you have an I Laughed story you'd like to tell, I'd like very much to hear it. Shoot me an email with a synopsis of your incident, and we'll consider it for an episode. My address is rob@flying.media. That's rob@flying.media. Thank you for listening, and I do hope you'll subscribe and share it with your friends. I Laughed is available wherever you get your podcasts. We drop episodes every couple of weeks, so you can hear the firsthand accounts of the flying lessons that sometimes only experience can teach. The I Laughed theme and commercial instrumental music for the podcast was written and performed by Rob Potter. Lisa DeFries is the executive producer of I Laughed, and Julie Boatman is editor-in-chief of Flying Magazine. For Avemco Aviation Insurance and Flying Magazine, fueling the passion for flight since 1927, I'm Rob Ryder. Catch you next time on I Learned About Flying From That.